Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the Cooperstown All-Star Village in Oneonta, New York, this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, August 7th, 2024. How's everybody doing out there? I tell you what, it's a one hell of a program they have here out at Cooperstown. We are out here with the TBT New York Travel League Baseball franchise, where my son is a member of. We're watching him and 71 other teams out here compete. In case you've been following social media over the last 6 months, Alyssa Milano has been getting a lot of flack for fundraising off of her Instagram page for this event for her son. And her son was here, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, and competed. I tell you what, fantastic thing. Why is this such a big deal where teams are coming from all over the country out to here? Well, it is the Cooperstown Baseball Hall of Fame is right down the road here, number one. Number two, this is for what they call 12U. So 12U is the last year that you have the Little League fields. The 13U now moves up to the bigger fields. So this is like the real big deal out here for everybody. I mean, they have barracks for the children to stay, the different teams. They have programs. Yesterday they had 1986 baseball great Howard Johnson here. From the 1986 Mets, the World Series championships that year. And he was here giving a little talk to everybody, met with some of the teams, some of the kids, and they, you know, it's a great thing. It's like what we call the Little League Disney version, right? Disney World of Little League out here. And there are other facilities like this throughout the country, just that this one gets a lot of publicity. And there's another one right down the road here, very similar deal. Now, on with the safety. Jim, why, you know, you're talking about this. You don't normally talk about sports. Well, we second program in a row we're talking about sports. Come on. It's life. Now, what's going on in the world of safety? We are dealing with here in the Northeast and on the East Coast in general in the United States with all these storms. We're dealing with the remnants of Tropical Storm or Hurricane Debbie. I don't know what they called it. I haven't really been following. Maybe I should before I get on the air. But anyway, lots of rain, lots of stuff. I mean, we, like I said, over the weekend, we had an issue with lack of internet access in my town and all the different things out there. And what I'm going to point out, regardless of anything out here, the political situation, which we're not talking about here on this program, and everything else, you got to be responsible for yourself and for your organizations out there. Don't rely on the government. Don't rely on international organizations, standards, anything like that to protect you, because as we found out, even the most well-intentioned people out there, most well-intentioned organizations, get hit with these disasters, these emergencies, and they really can't protect you out here. You're on your own for, as the government points out, 72 to 96 hours. And when we go to the disaster preparation month starting next month in the United States, we're going to go over this stuff again and again and again. I'm hoping to have new fervor in covering all this stuff. Couple of things, other things that happen other than the storms in the news. We have One that impacts pretty much anyone that deals with the internet here are Google. There was a lawsuit, and Google has been ruled as an illegal monopoly. And so all the search engines and everything else, I'm sure things are going to be appealed, and because they have a lot of money, they're going to go and, they're going to appeal, and they have the money to last for this. I don't know if there's going to enforce the ruling here, but we'll see. So this is the story here. On Monday, a U.S. federal judge ruled that Google has violated antitrust law, saying the organization is a monopolist and it has acted as one to maintain its monopoly. Google disputes the ruling. Its president of global affairs, Kent Walker, said this decision recognizes that Google offers the best search engine, but concludes that we shouldn't be allowed to make it easily available. So, regardless of what's going on, we're going to see some changes probably in the near future. Was there a world without Google on the internet? Yeah, there was. Back in the day, you had many different search engines out there. 4 or 5 major ones, as I recall. I would have to look them up to see what they were. One of them was Lycos, Lycos. And you had Yahoo, had its own system out there. Those are the two main ones, and there were more. And since then, there's been a lot of others that have come into play, all with different attributes, some with different security measures, tracking, and everything else. And I think that's what Google is more famous for, is not only the search engine, is the tracking of everything, where it's full vertical and horizontal integration into our lives. And I think that may have something more to do with this ruling here than anything, is that you cannot avoid Google. But we'll see what else happens. Now, being that I'm at All Star Village, and this is like a working vacation here, here is from Study Finds. Average person forgets 3 essential items at home after leaving for vacation. I can empathize with this, because what do you think I forgot? Socks, right? I had like 2 pairs of socks for a 1-week trip. Thank God for Wally World or Walmart, right down the street, and some of the other places. Does your vacation checklist read more like a suspense novel with forgotten items playing the roles of villains ready to sabotage your perfect getaway? It can be mightily frustrating to realize you left something at home after you arrived at your destination. According to a poll of 2,000 adults, 9 out of 10 Americans admit they've had their home alone moments, minus the burglars and booby traps. So what do people find themselves leaving behind more often? Results show about a third have forgotten their phone charger. Yeah, I can empathize. I got like 10 phone chargers here. I remember them all this time. Along with toiletries, some beauty products. So, how many toothbrushes can you have? Well, we're going to find out in Jim's lifetime. More than a quarter wound up having to buy new sunscreen on vacation. Well, that's a normal one. And 18% forgot to bring their medication. I tell you what, that could be a problem, especially with some things here. And this was from Crystal Geyser Alpine Spring Water, who did this. Now, how do we control for that? Checklist? Pre-planning? It seems like with me, whenever I pack at the last moment, I'm going to forget something. My wife, on the other hand, being the event and meeting planner that she is, goes out and plans things out weeks ahead of time. She has checklists, especially for the children. And then, not only do they double check, she does double checks. Everything that they get. And everything that they pack. And even today, because she says, look, your headache, your mistake, my problem, my headache. So we try to do that ahead of time. Well, no, within reason. I tell you what we're finding out here is that there's so many teams coming from like California that they actually, the first, and they need like certain things, like a team cooler. You're not going to pack a $80 team cooler on a plane and then pay 50 some bucks or more to transport it. You're going to buy it here, and they buy it here, and they also sell it here. Because a lot of the teams, now their flight isn't until Sunday, so they put it on their social media, hey, we got stuff for sale, and people go buy this stuff. No, coolers, shares, things of that nature. So, again, you may want to, if you're coming to an event like this, you might want to plan ahead a little bit more. Here's one for you, another thing. I remember this coming out, right, with the four-day work week. It seems to me like when I got out of college, they started this whole thing with the four-day work week. A lot of companies felt that they would get more production. I guess if you're dealing with certain things, if you're not in the service industry like the safety industry is, I can see where this may be able to work out, where you have four 10-hour days and it's 40 hours and everything else. Because especially if you have huge amounts of setup time, this is going to be an issue for you. Now, here is an article here. Where is it from? It was from MSN.com. Economic concerns could lead to layoffs and reduced remote work opportunities in the U.S. A weaker than expected jobs report could give cover to CEOs who want to reconsider work policies. But reverting to traditional work models could harm productivity and employee morale. Well, I don't know. A lot of companies that I know went to a four-day work week and then went back. Because what happened? Hey, can you come in Friday? It always turns in to a five-day work week, especially in the safety industry. And let's face it, a lot of companies, especially one of my former employers, if you did not put in 60 hours a week, you were lazy. Yeah, they pay you the 40 hours a week for salary, but they want 60 hours worth of billable work. And then they wonder why everybody burns out, and they have a high turnover rate. Now, a couple of years of that, you're going to get there. However, this seems to be move outside of the U.S. also, like companies like Samsung are reportedly telling executives, come on in on Saturday or Sunday. We need to more business output. You know, and let's face it, a lot of these at-home workers out there, they do things that are not necessarily related to work. I know some workers have opportunities where, hey, they may do other things during the day, but then they work until 2 o'clock in the morning getting their job done. That happens also. So I guess what I'm saying is it depends on the business, it depends on the worker, and it depends on management. A lot of people complain about the remote work because they don't know who works at the company anymore. If you're in an office with 75 people or 60 people, like a lot of tech companies I work with, all of a sudden you have only 5 people showing up to work on any day. Nobody gets to know each other. I guess that morning water cooler stuff really is important in a lot of workplace environments. And, you know, with what's going on with the stock market, you can see some companies getting into panic mode here. Here's a story out in Southern California. Happened late last night, or early this morning if you're on the East Coast. An earthquake northwest of Los Angeles shook a large swath of Southern California Tuesday night, but there were no immediate reports of damage. And the U.S. Geological Survey said the 5.2 magnitude trembler struck at 9.09 p.m. and was centered near Mettler, an unincorporated area in the Kern County, about 85 miles from downtown Los Angeles. Again, they reportedly had a lot of aftershocks in the first hour here, something like 28 aftershocks. So, I don't know, we had an earthquake this week out on the East Coast here. Again, people are rattled because of the earthquake earlier this year, the 5.2 centered in Gladstone. We had another, like a 2 point something over in New Jersey also. believe it was around Lebanon, the reported resting place of the most evil man in the UK at the time, in Britain, Aleister Crowley. So, in that area, does that have a connection? I have no idea. Well, we're going to find out soon enough. Here's one getting to Disaster Preparation Month here. So, apparently the super rich out there like a bunker designed to want a bunker. We heard this thing back, especially after 9/11, the whole thing with safe rooms, or you had to have a safe room. And this is when they started to really promote disaster preparation, was right after September 11th, where they're out there with, you have to have a safe room, and it was for criminal activity, maybe short-term emergencies. But the super rich, and by the way, based on my research and a lot of interviews and talks I've done with people over the years, in preparation for this program, nobody wants to come on here to discuss this because it's, not here, but any internet program-based program, podcast, is that they make a lot of money planning this out for people, number one. Number two, they don't need the exposure. And number three, once you start identifying yourself as a planner for this stuff, now you get into security issues where, you did it. You did this for so-and-so. Now we want to deal with so-and-so and rob that person. Therefore, let's talk to a security consultant, that sort of thing. So people like to keep their mouths shut. And I will say I spoke to a lot of people in law enforcement who are here. They had something like 100 people who were first responders and in law enforcement got special recognition yesterday here at Cooperstown at the All-Star Village. All the police officers I know don't even admit, because the way things are politically, they don't even admit that they're police officers unless they're on duty in the uniform. They're worried about security, which is pretty sad. But here we have situations, and here the super rich they're not so worried about a safe room anymore. That stands for strategically armored and fortified environment. That's one of the phrases attributed to that acronym. They're doing a lot more. As we found out this weekend in my town with the loss of the internet, you had people going out there, going stir-crazy at home. When they're finding this out with the super rich, hey, we're going stir-crazy, so what are they doing? They're adding these lavish home entertainment centers to their quote-unquote safe rooms. It's now called a safe property. And where are these things located? Most of the time, not in the United States. Even though I know for a fact that some billionaires and millionaires have them. And I'm looking at one picture from Mumbai, where they have a two-lane bowling alley, along with all the... nobody keeps score by hand anymore. So they have the computers keep score on everything on a bowling alley. Incredible. I know... I don't know if it's there anymore. The White House, had a bowling alley in the basement, 10 lanes, for emergency use anyway. So, and then I think it was a pool or something else. Tailor-made. I don't know anything about that. I just remember this stuff and what they currently have. We're going to go on over to our OSHA news and views today. This is all off the Department of Labor website, and I have to remind everybody, all the companies we discuss, everybody is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, and a lot of this stuff is negotiated, litigated, reduced downward, and all of the penalties here are proposed penalties and citations. Here we have a Department of Labor finds East Texas pallet manufacturer continues to defy federal safety regulations and expose workers to amputation hazards. This is right off the news release here. Despite receiving warnings and citations for more than a decade, a Jacksonville pallet manufacturer's history of failing to protect workers from the risk of amputation continues, and the Department of Labor follow-up inspection has found. So let's remember, you have an initial investigation and maybe citations, and then especially, and I now this may sound like me being a wise guy. Maybe it is. I don't know. Usually when you pay the bill, usually you're guaranteed for a follow-up inspection with that. For whatever, that's my experience. Where if you're going to go out there and litigate and everything else, often regulatory agencies say, you know what, that's the cost of us doing business may be a little bit high here. So they want the low-hanging fruit like everybody else. Basic environmental policy and government policy, they go for the low-hanging fruit first. In my experience, and that's what they taught us at college, at least. So low-hanging fruit. Inspectors with OSHA returned to a certain company in Texas in February 2024 and found lockout-tagout violations similar to those discovered during inspections in 2012 and subsequent video visits in 2014, 2020, and 2022, and the company now faces $254,000 plus in proposed penalties. So during two of the inspections, the company was found liable for one willful violation and 12 serious violations related to unsafe machine operations, forklifts, and not using the required seatbelts. Right, so forklift drivers, big thing. And this is very easy to observe, right? This is like very the lowest of low-hanging fruits out there, to repeat myself. What they have to, a lot of forklift operators, because they feel they're only going out there, this is only a 1 minute or 2 minute long operation, I'm not gonna wear seatbelts. And I lost count the number of times I had to correct this. Here on my project. We also have their fall hazards and workers not trained to understand or follow lotto procedures. Problem, now, and I was listening to Todd Conklin several months ago on this, who's on the Safety FM Network, pre-accident investigations. Hierarchy of controls we have from NIOSH, right, where you have elimination. You have eliminate the hazard, then you have right, substitute a very dangerous operation with a less dangerous operation, and then you have an engineering control, then administrative and PPE. Administrative and PPE stuff is towards the bottom of the pyramid, and it's you're requiring workers to go out there and follow a rule. Unfortunately, lockout, tagout, a lot of rules. A lot of areas where you could fail at. How do we manage this? Many different ways. Unfortunately, most of the time, companies go out there and they're, you know, we got to do it. They get the whip out there, right? I understand that, but let's face it, you know, with the worker rules and everything, workers are not going to follow rules all the time. Not going to happen. It's the least reliable method of managing something. Unfortunately, lockout tagout is one of those things where you see a lot of violations. And I'm going to say this much. In my experience, companies do not get cited, could get cited for a lot more stuff that they're not being cited on, which tells you that they're more OSHA's work interested in compliance rather than punishment. Now, let's see. Let's see if they have. Ooh. For some reason, I checked this out before the program. For some reason, they did not. Boom, boom, boom. They took off the accident report. It was on there before I got on here. No, apparently, they just took it off. Oh, well. But that's basically it. One willful and 12 serious violations here with this, and we'll leave it at that. Department of Labor finds Southeast Oklahoma contractors' history of safety violations contributed to fatal trench collapse. We covered this last week with another company with this. Here we have a company faces $87,173 in proposed penalties for a cave-in. And this is all from a, hold on, computer. Here we go. So this is, there was a fatality here of a 61-year-old worker with this. And this is the only one where we'll have time to do. I'm hoping to be on the air again tomorrow. Where you have a no internet connection here, so I cannot do this live. This has to be pre-recorded, and we'll be uploading it to the podcast. Citation item one, this is for $10,600. The employer did not instruct each employee in the recognition and avoidance of unsafe conditions. Again, no training. They're installing water lines. This was in February, and they labor was exposed to soil collapse when required to enter an unprotected trench that was reportedly 9 foot deep. Citation item two, another $10,600, and they're doing this on a per instance. Same thing, no training. 1926-651 K1, daily inspections of excavations in adjacent areas were not made by a competent person. Again, all those things where you have to do an inspection or verification or anything like that need to be done in writing. And today with that thing called a smartphone, that makes things a lot easier. 10,647. This is citation number one. Repeat serious. No adequate shoring or protective system or anything in there. 53,232. And that's a total 85,000. And going right, 85,000. That's what they list here with this. So, you know, it's, I don't know what to tell you on here. So we got time for one more. To one more. Yeah, 85,000. Yeah, here we go. Federal law court forbids owner of 61 mega liquor and smoke stores from engaging in employee retaliation following a Labor Department investigation. The U.S. Department of Labor obtained a permanent injunction and order. This is from South Bend, Indiana. An order forbidding the owner and operator of, I don't know if this is the name of the company or not. They have 61 stores, and I think I mentioned the name. Again, that was inadvertent, and everyone's innocent until proven guilty and everything else. And Indiana and Michigan from retaliating against workers who cooperate with the U.S. Department of Labor. Wage and Hour Division determined that the employer retaliated against workers and spoke to investigators and tried to coerce them to return back wages found due. The court also forbids the employer from terminating any employees or reducing their wage rates or hours worked for a period of 6 months unless he submits a written notice 7 days in advance to the department to any affected employee as to the non-retaliatory business justification for the termination and or reduction of wage rates or hours. How much do they owe him? A lot. Like $200,000+ when you do the math here. And they did this to 156 employees. And they assessed them damages. So the total thing came down to $354,000+. With this. What do? You just got to obey the law. So that's all I have here. We'll be giving updates throughout the week. And I hope to hear you on the next Safety Wars. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.